Good morning, Brother John.
Good morning.
Yeah, it's a good one. We're doing okay. Woo! Yeah, we got some chilly weather here. We're 51 degrees.
Oh, well, we're more like in the 40s with a continual, like, rain, but not real hard. And it's going to probably rain off and on
Chicago
most of the day with clouds. So, But overall, the weekend's looking pretty good. So there's some good weather in front of us. So
Excellent. Yeah. Same here. Okay, so we got a lot to unpack today, so we better get to it. We're going to try and hold it to 45 minutes, but who knows if we strike a deep vein. In this case, it's a geologic reference. We will. I must give a warning, an explicit warning. We will be talking about matters medical and personal. If you're you don't want to hear it, you better bail. But I think you will want to hear it because I think we've got a real handle on this. So I'm going to frame it a little bit, John, and then you fill in here a little bit for me, if you would.
Sounds good.
Okay. So we are not doctors, obviously, but we both have prostate cancer, and we have a couple other little variations to add to that, but we're not going to talk about that today. We're going to talk about our prostate cancer, our experiences with it, how we dealt with it, and, interestingly enough, how all that led to a podcast and how that led to a lot of other great things that happened to the both of us, relationship-wise, psychology-wise. There's a lot to dealing with cancer, and I would recommend this show to anybody in their 40s, who's a male specifically, but if you're married to a male, then I would also suggest this for you because we've got some cautionary information, lessons learned kind of stuff that we'll share with regard to spouses and partners and what have you. So, that said, let's get started a little bit.
Right.
Kick it off, John, if you would.
Well, I think it all starts with the fact is that where are you in terms of your health before all this happens? I mean, you know, you can't control the fact that your PSA level goes up, and all of a sudden you're confronted with a diagnosis of prostate cancer. But on the front end, I think it's important for us to understand that I think both of us in our own special way have addressed the issue of maintaining healthy lifestyles. My bent has been being an active person in terms of exercise, just my regular routine. I commute by bike. So I'm pretty active, and I'm 70 years old, and with a secondary emphasis on my diet, and my diet has become a more of an issue as with most people as you get older. Obviously, you're kind of confronted with that. Mm. So here we got a platform or a basis upon which, you know, it's important, I think, for people to realize that being healthy is a very positive thing in terms of addressing the issue of your illness particularly as you get older. So that's kind of where I would start. Your emphasis has been primary. Your emphasis has been a little different. It's more diet. You can maybe explain how you've confronted it.
Right. And this is where the 40-year-old thing comes in, is that, you know, if you're 55 and you're a male, you got a 50-50 chance of getting prostate cancer. If your brother has prostate cancer, almost for sure you're going to have prostate cancer. Is that correct, John?
Well, it was interesting. When I was diagnosed, one of the things that made my urologist's eyes light up is when I told him that my brother had prostate cancer. Now, it's kind of interesting. We're not talking about us. We're talking about our third brother.
Yep.
And it was just all of a sudden, man, you could just see the bells and whistles went off. He knew that I was going to be a very good candidate.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So the time to start thinking about this stuff. And I was lucky when I was 42, my GP, Dr. Dawson, said to me, you know, and by that time, I'm a software developer, so I have a very sedentary lifestyle unless I do something about it. And I had pretty terrific back pain, which a lot of developers have. People think of software developers and they think of math and stuff like that, but that's not the issue. The issue really, if you're a software developer, can you sit on your ass for 12 to 16 hours a day? And if you're working in an office, in a bullpen or something like that, there's a lot of pressure to stay in your seat and do your work, and they evaluate you by it. So it's a hard thing. So I had to make a decision when I was 42. You know, are you going to get healthy? Are you going to do something about this stuff? Or are you going to continue to decline? Get your weight under control. You got to do something about your exercise. You got to fix your back, you know, and clean up your diet, and a whole bunch of stuff. So I started confronting that when I was 42. I didn't do the exercise route like John did, but it kind of ended up in the same place. We were kind of like the same thinness or health muscle mass level when we went into this. And we both... Both our doctors said, wow, if it wasn't for the cancer, you guys would be in really good health. Does that sound right, John?
Now that's correct. I mean, it's important, and particularly as you get further into it and some of the options, how you were able to react to treatment can be significantly affected by your state of health.
Oh, yeah, because you got to have some physical resources to deal with some of this stuff. Because if you're going to take some of the drugs that go along with this stuff, there are side effects. If you're going to have some of the surgery, there are side effects. And then you've got to have the... And plus your psychology, that's the other thing. And this is where the thing with John and I personally, I think, or with you and I, why talk in third person? This is the thing with you and I that really comes into play, is that, you know... Psychology. You know, you have to stay ahead of this thing. You have to lean into it. You almost have to be a little aggressive about it, and not let it get the best of your psychology. And that's where having someone to talk to, having someone in the same boat, and that kind of stuff. And John and I, you know, I'd say 5 years ago would have never thought that we'd be sitting here talking, you know, every day about our situation and helping each other. But because we thought we were such different people.
So we're healthy. I think that's pretty well been made. I mean, personally, we feel that way. I'm sure other people might say, well, they're, you know, another step above. But the fact is, we feel real good about it. So what was the wake-up call?
Our doctors do.
And I mean, what was the wake-up call where we basically were confronted with, wow. And that, you know, for each of us is kind of a little bit different. But I think it points out the fact that as you take a look at finding out that you have it, it's important to have a timely, you know, that physical that you get is important. And the fact is that it's relatively easily detectable. Your PSA level goes up. From the last time you had an exam, it's a warning sign, and all of a sudden, you know, you have a series of tests, this and that, and in my situation, what happened is I went that route and then had the biopsy done, and of course, the biopsy turned out that I had cancer in my prostate,
right.
And that's kind of, you know, I was fortunate enough to be able to get it at the point where I was diagnosed with stage 2. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, that put me in a position up to that point. I think it's interesting that our the road by which we learned is a little bit different. And Jerry, you might share exactly how you got.
Yeah, what was your PSA, John? What was your PSA when you got
diagnosed? It was like real. I mean, it wasn't that high. It is a high relative. It was like 4.2, but it isn't so much the PSA level as how much it's increased from the time before. And I couldn't tell you how much it increased. But obviously, it's
double.
The spike.
Even
it's
doubles.
Not the number itself. So you don't want to be in a situation where you're comparing with friends what your PSA levels is.
No.
That has really not relevant. The relevant issue is your own personal trend and increase is the important piece.
Correct. Because my situation was I had missed a checkup, and... So I was not my yearly, and, you know, it was closer to 2.5 and almost, it was about 2.5. So things came up in it, you know, whatever. But the fact is, when my problem was a double duty. On November 5th, my son got hit by a car, and killed him. That just really, obviously, it was pretty devastating. And then I'm dealing with that in the best way that I can. Mary Jane and I, my wife, are dealing, and my daughter Rose, are dealing with that, all three of us, the best we possibly can. And then so as the days tick by after that, within 10 days, I was unable to pee. And it was kind of like maybe my body was dealing with what was going on inside of it. And when Joe got killed, my body just said, oh, what the hell, you know. And this thing just flared up huge. Within 10 days, I was unable to pee, and I looked like I was like in my first trimester. I had a bulge, a bladder.
Let me tell you that quite often, this is a situation where that your health quite often will delay your indication mm-hmm. of your illness, because symptoms. Being healthy, your body is doing what its best job of warding off, you mm-hmm. know, things that are going wrong. So quite often, you're all of a sudden, boom, it's going to hit you like a mm-hmm. you know, like a rock, that you're going to just good. And that's because and good health can quite often, you know, lead in that direction. So yeah. That's why, you know, in your situation with good health, it kind of hits you all of a sudden.
And it's psychology, too. A lot of it is psychology, too, because during that 10-day period when it was ramping up to critical mass, so to speak, if I was engaged in something heavily, you know, like, you know, arranging... we had a sort of a wake for my son, wiping of the tears ceremony for him at his place of work. And during the ramp up to that, in that period of time, that was like a respite. You know, my mind was totally engaged in that, and it was not on my mind, and I just, I didn't even know it. But as soon as that thing was over, bam, within 48 hours, you know, I was at a doctor's office and really suffering.
Yep.
So, anyways, where do we go from here?
Well, what happens is that then you, of course, have to go through the, a biopsy mm-hmm. to determine exactly the extent at which you have cancer. There's, you know, issues, with CAT scans, et cetera, and all this, to determine whether the cancer, you know, where it lies and what state you're in. And so we both kind of went through that
different ways.
Series of events. And
yeah. Mine was precipitated by an emergency. I hadn't urinated in 48 hours, and that was getting really bad. My edema, kidney failure, and bad stuff. So I had to be catheterized immediately so that I could pee.
Yeah,
so that was
my situation was more with my doctor. You know, here you are. I have a physician. My primary care physician is a little bit older. So as a result, it's kind of once he sees the PSA level, he kind of goes in automatic. It's pretty rote for him. He knows what to do. He, you know, the other thing I think that this points out is it's the importance of, you know, having your primary care physician is going to then recommend to you a specialist, in this mm-hmm. case, a urologist. And I feel very fortunate that, you know, although my doctor's a little older, he basically has a reputation of having the best Rolodex in the city. I know I'm just bragging, but the fact is I've heard that from several people. And it does pay off to be then referred to an expert or a well established, experienced physician
who knows you.
In
that
this
guy
case,
knows you too.
Yeah,
your primary knows you, right?
Yes, I mean he's been my primary for a long time. He was my wife, so it's mm-hmm. It isn't like we're friends, but we're definitely pretty close.
Right, and he knows your medical history. I had the same thing, Dr. Dawson. Was the guy who told me when I was 42 to, you know, get with it. And I'm 68 now, so that's quite a few years ago. So, and I saw him starting when I was maybe about 40. So yeah, he knew me, knew what to do, and he gave me a great reference. Just like you, I got Dr. Yang, who's a Chicago boy too, Illinois boy.
Yeah, my doctor Kozlowski is Northwestern University and considered. He's the teacher's teacher. He's the guy who not only can perform the surgery, but he's the one who teaches other physicians on how to do it and how to handle the whole situation.
Right.
So I think we kind of... although we have the same cancer, our paths to get there and our paths, in terms of treatment, everything is kind of gone different directions, which is kind of good because we're able to bounce things off each other that in some way are common, but in some way are so different. And I think that's kind of helped us both as we've tried to go down this journey.
Yep, definitely. So, yeah, my situation is different than John's in that he's stage two. Again, PSAs mean nothing, almost. If they're doubling or rising, that's your marker. And I at first thought, when I got my PSA, I thought, well, we must be using a different scale than John and my brother Jeff.
Yeah.
I thought, well, his is 4, Jeff's was 9.
I thought,
And I got mine, it's 125. So I go, no, a decimal point's missing here. It must be 12.5 or, right?
Yeah.
We both thought that, I think. And then,
It was sort of like, well, you're not measuring in feet, you're measuring in milliliters. Or, it was sort of like we thought there was another measure, standard of measure that we're talking about. But we realized that, it's just part of the learning process.
Dr. Yang told me he's had plenty of patients that are over 1,000. And that's just, right? So it just shows you that, and he said, and their treatment's not going to be different than yours. He says, everyone's treatment is different. Everyone's numbers are different, all that stuff. You can't pay attention to that stuff and focus on it and get overwhelmed by it. You got to stick to what's going on right now. And he just did a thing with me because, he's a very conservative guy. And he goes, I'm going to tell you what you need to know when you need to know it. And that just started, immediately. Even with the catheter, he did not give me a lot of prep. Don't watch any videos. Don't do anything. Just come on in here. And man, he knocked that thing out like you wouldn't believe. And he did it perfectly. He told me just what I needed to know when I needed to know it. So I didn't freak out. And I got through. And man, that's been my saving grace with that guy is he, we'll talk about some of the other stuff that our doctors did. But that was the big one right there is that he just got me into this. Within 48 hours, he had me taking the medication I needed to take. And I knew what my options were for what I had. It was stage 4. After the biopsy, I knew it was stage 4. We thought it was stage 4 right away because the PSA count and the fact that, after he got the plugs, the biopsy, we should talk just a second about the biopsies because that can be radically different for different people too. We discovered, didn't we, John?
Right. Well, the thing is that you might be told, for example, my biopsy was originally scheduled to be on an outpatient basis in the doctor's office. And then all of a sudden I get a call and the doctor says, well, look, we've taken a look at your CAT scans. Your cancer is in several different places within your prostate rather than being a little more centralized. So as a result, we'd like you to come in to the hospital and do an outpatient thing there. And it's amazing that the difference, I've talked to people, I was like
yours
6 or 7 hours. Yeah, it was, took a while. First thing is, I was just not, I don't know if it was just because I decided not to or I just was naive. But I had no idea what I was being confronted with. I had no idea I was going to be catheterized during the process. Well, I think if you do it on an outpatient basis, Jerry, you were already, obviously.
Yeah.
But the fact is that, and then as I went through and, it took forever. I was the last person that day, and it just seemed like they were delayed. And before you know it, it's all done, and I... sort of put in a twilight.
They gave you a twilight drug, didn't they?
Yeah, they gave you a twilight. So as a result, and I'm pretty sensitive to it, so it's just like I'm knocked out. I wake up, and I feel, I feel like I have to go to urinate, I think. And then all of a sudden I realize that I'm catheterized. I'll just very quickly go through that. And then they say, well, look, you're not leaving this place until you urinate. And then you find out, well, you're not urinating until they take the catheter out. So it's then you drink. And so sure enough, then what I do is they finally, yank the catheter out.
They kind of yank it out too. It comes out.
Yeah, they
fast.
Do. I mean, there's no like, what they want to do, it's sort of like taking a Band-Aid off.
Yes.
Let's not do it slowly. We're just going to, do it one quick. You feel it. It's not any pain, but
it's
obviously noticeable, and it's an unusual. Yeah, it's an unusual feeling. So I end up, being ushered into the bathroom, and all of a sudden I urinate and realize that I've got a lot of blood in my urine, which is normal under these circumstances, and I proceed to then get sick. I just immediately vomit.
Right. And Jeff gave you a heads up on this, didn't he?
He
said, don't look in the toilet?
No. You know, bottom line is, I talked to him after the fact, and he told me his experience was the same. He just had no idea what's going on. But, you know, this is just, you know, it's part of the exercise, and you go through, and then, you know, so the thing is that then you got to deal with, my situation is pretty standard in terms of what your options are, but the problem is you've got options.
Yes.
So here we are, here I am, where, you know, and these are the ones in Jerry's experience is kind of a little more unusual and not as well known. But mine is the pretty standard thing. Okay, you've got an option here. You've got stage two. You can either decide to get radiation or you can get an operation and have your prostate removed.
Or seeds.
I know that, and then you've got the seeds as a kind of a little bite, a little kind of a subset of the radiation possibility. I was told I couldn't do seeds, so therefore I'm talking about radiation versus getting surgery. And I was struggling as I went through and talked to radiologists and then, you know, the different back and forth. And I basically was kind of forced into my decision. And this is a kind of little sideline, which we won't talk too much about. But a month after I was diagnosed with prostate cancer, I was then diagnosed with rectal cancer as a result of a colonoscopy. And what happened was that
it should be noted that that's a separate cancer. That's not the same as prostate cancer.
Yeah, this is what they call synchronous cancer.
Yes.
And, you know, usually you think about that with swimming, but in my situation, it's not like a metastasize from one place to the other, even though these two cancers are relatively close. So all of a sudden, my decisions became a little bit easier to make.
Yep.
You know, you would think, well, here you are. Now you're really confronted with a big problem. Big problem, yes. But answers are what you do is relatively simple. And the fact is that I was, my rectal surgeon said, look, while we got the hood up, let's just yank them both out at the same time. So I ended up having surgery, 9.5 hours worth of surgery, and had them both yanked out. But we'll concentrate on the prostate part.
Yeah.
Because, you know, what happened was that in my case, you have to then think in terms of that you can't, you know, if it's just prostate, you'd go boom right in and you'd do the radiation, you do the surgery. Couldn't do that because what they had to do then was prep me, and I had a period of time before they could address both of them, you know, maybe 3 months. So what they do is they gave me the typical hormone shot that's sort of a precursor to the either treatment, radiation or surgery, where their objective is to try to get the tumors in control and reduce them to some extent and stage you then for what your treatment's going to be. So I ended up doing the surgery and so it was pretty standard. Jerry, your road is continuing, and not to say that mine isn't, because I've obviously got issues with my other cancer, which is a whole nother subject. So maybe you can describe, you know, what courses of action you were confronted with and how you finally came to where you are.
Now, this is very interesting because this is like, I look at it this way. There's two, John and I are both fond of math, and I think we both found out that we think this way a lot, and I'm particularly fond of geometry. So I see two lines. I have my hands apart right now, and they're at an angle that are going to converge if I move my hands forward. So we are converging because, you know, we are very different people. You know, we were born 2 years and an hour and a half apart. Yet, he's one astrological sign and I'm another, not that I go by astrology necessarily. But the point is we're very different. We're different colors. We have different hair. We have different skull shapes. We have different eye color. We have different hands. He uses his left hand, I use my left. He's an accountant. I'm, you know, software developer and have a more, you know, kind of an art thing going on, design thing. We've always thought traditionally for years. We're just very different people with very little in common. I'm not interested in baseball at all. John is obsessed with it, you know, and I'm obsessed with different stuff. All Daniel's boys are obsessive. So that's a given. But here we are, we're apart, and I see these lines starting to converge, and we've both got cancer. We both got one cancer in common. Yet, what's happening to me is so different. I did not go into a hospital. I did not go into a clinic. I went in my doctor's office. I heard from John. I heard from Jeff. Holy shit, you're going to have a biopsy. Don't look at the toilet, Jeff tells me. Have someone drive you. You are going to be laid low, brother. And you know what? I wasn't. I got there. I said to the doctor, how long is this going to take? Because my wife wants to know if she can go shopping. And she says, no, she better stay here. It's 20 minutes. I said, what? Because John just had hours, and he had an ordeal. And they said, oh, 20 minutes. I said, can I leave on my own? Can I drive? Because Mary Jane would rather have me drive because she doesn't see that well. I said, oh, yeah, you can drive. I'm just totally confused now. I'm going, everything up to now is different. I have had no CAT scans, no MRIs, no nothing. They're kind of treating me a little bit like an ER guy. They want to get me, first they had to get me catheterized, and now they want to find out how bad it is. And this is even before I've had a scan. So I'm in there for my biopsy in the doctor's office. And so I'm thinking, are things really different in Austin than they are in Chicago? And John's thinking, well, this is Jerry, you know, he does everything a little different, you know. Probably in the back, right? That's in the back of your mind a little bit?
Yeah, so you must have a witch doctor or voodoo or something down there.
Yeah, yeah. At work. And of course, Jeff and my mom are thinking the same thing, right? So it's crazy, right? But again, the lines are converging. You know, that's the thing to focus on. And that's really why we're here today, is those lines have continued to converge because John started immediately getting out his prostate cancer book, which he wisely bought, and he's gotten me to buy a copy of. And so he's discovering that, no, Jerry's on the right track. Because, you know, we find out after the biopsy, which, by the way, mine was painless. I mean, totally painless. It was very easy. It didn't pass any blood through either my penis or my anus. And it was just, really couldn't have been smoother. But, you know, we got the results back really quickly. And, you know, he measured how big my prostate was. It was 3.5 times the size it should be. And it doesn't just enlarge. It enlarges in a certain way. Mine enlarged in a certain way that really was cutting off my urethra. So, you know, I was going to be on a catheter for a while. And so my catheter was permanent. John's that he had put in was not, and I had to have mine taken out in order to get my biopsy because they didn't want to hit it. They have this little thing that takes plugs, and they didn't want to hit it. So, okay, understood. And so we did that, got the plugs, got it done, got the results. I had like, you know, about a third of my prostate was good, but the other two-thirds of it was, the Gleason scale was 6 to 9, which is very high. And he just said, you know, it's almost for sure it's spread. So, and then, you know, he didn't want to tell me, but I pushed him a little bit, and he said, yeah, you're stage 4, you know, okay. So I said, well, what are my options? I'm getting ready for the same pitch John got, you know, but I didn't get that at all. I got a very, very different treatment plan that was, I mean, again, I've started to think, is this, what's going on here? You know, is it how can the same cancer be treated so radically different? My treatment, and when John says hormones, he doesn't mean hormones, he means blockers. Something is going to block the production of androgen by blocking the production of testosterone, and prostate cancer lives and dies by, or I should say, is active or inactive, according to the level of androgen you have in your system, which is the thing that creates the secondary sex characteristics in a male. Okay, so I'm told you only have one treatment. Your treatment is called ADT, androgen deprivation therapy. And everyone with prostate does at least some of that. And they do it as a prep or surgery or radiation to get it smaller. But he says,
so we basically did the, so we both had the same deprivation therapy. Mine was just as a prep, as I already pointed out, while yours was going to be your main treatment.
Well, I came to find out not just my main treatment, it's going to be my lifelong treatment.
Yeah, well.
Which is a big thing to think about, because now you have to figure out, okay, there's a way, that, now, when you got your stuff, you took a pill called Casodex, which knocks off all the testosterone production, androgen production in your adrenals, and then you got a super duper shot that lasts for 6 months that knocks out your testicles, keeps them from creating androgen / testosterone. And they want to get you down to unmeasurable levels of testosterone. They don't measure below a certain point. And you hit it pretty quick, I imagine, right?
Yeah, I mean, the urologist I came in, they checked and did all the level thing, and I was, you know, in pretty good shape. But the importance for me was that I need, you know, a 6 month shot. You know, usually you wouldn't need that to have that long, but because of my other cancer, I needed to have, you know, at least 4 months and even perhaps longer before we could address the issue of treating my prostate cancer. So it was very important that I had that prep work done. And it was, like you said, a combination of both pills and the actual shot.
Right.
So
that's something
you can expect.
Yes. I think just about everybody gets that much.
Yeah.
But, you know, my future was, you know, and here's where it starts to get a little frustrating, is that my situation is that they're going to put me on ADP totally, 100%. And so they wanted me to do that as fast as possible. Then now they're going to get me the scans I need to really get a picture of what's going on and then get me hooked up with an oncologist. So up until now, I'm 100% with my urologist, Dr. Yang, a.k.a. the Yangster. So we're cruising along that level, and I've got a week or two, and now it's a weird situation because Joe had just died November 5th. Here I am, you know, I'm getting toward, November 20th? Something like that. My birthday is 23rd. Thanksgiving is like the 24th. And Mary Jane had to go. We were going to go see our daughter. But then this cancer thing came up, and I had to stay here. And Rose and Mary Jane went to see Rose, who's in Holland. And so she's going to stay there for a month. So here I am. I'm by myself. We're talking all the time, of course. And I have
a huge support system. Yeah, it's amazing.
And John.
Yeah, I think that kind of reinforced the fact here we are. I mean, we communicated obviously before all this on a kind of a sporadic, regular basis, but all of a sudden, since we have this common challenge in front of us, but each so different, but still so much the same, we ended up conversing practically on a daily basis. And I think that, you know, when you were confronted with the situation of being, you know, without your wife, to let you know, in my situation, my wife passed away about 10 years ago, so I'm kind of a widower that lives alone. So here we are, we're two guys just kind of hanging with challenges. So I think that really brought together and motivated and stimulated our conversation.
It pushed our nose into the trough, kind of, you know.
It
was a force-feeding kind of situation and then it turned out to be something different than we thought, you know. It turned out that, wow, there's so much more to, you know, this. I can talk about things with John that I can't talk about with anybody else, and vice versa. We won't gross each other out, more or less.
Right. I mean, we will have different situations where, you know, you just don't even feel comfortable talking to even other members of your family about.
Right. We can't tell Mom some of this stuff.
Yeah. So.
And Jeff doesn't.
Yeah, that helps a lot. Yeah, and our other brother is kind of in he's gone the cancer, you know, his whole thing with the prostate cancer happened 10 years ago. So as a result, that's something which, you know, it's history as far as he's concerned.
Right. And he's a little squeamish, you know, doesn't like confrontation and this stuff. So here's where my journey takes a departure even from most people with stage 4. Stage 4. Since it's all androgen deprivation treatment or therapy, I don't know what the T stands for, but it's something. Anyways, that's all I've got. So my exercise is very different. My game is going to be, it's going to be somewhat physical. I have one option, and I'm going to say what that is in a minute, and I'm going to give you a warning on this one because it's not something a lot of men like to hear. Women have no trouble with it whatsoever, because, you know, especially if they've given birth. Things weird, you know, weird situations with their body and a lot of blood and stuff like that, they're immune, it seems to me. So, you know, but men don't like to hear this stuff. But I had this one choice, and I looked carefully at it. And so shots and pills for ADT. But there is an option that your doctor probably isn't even going to recommend if you're in the U.S. And that is called an orchiectomy. An orchiectomy, simply put, is castration. Now, what you have to understand is lifelong shots and pills is castration. It's just done chemically, and it is permanent. So people often aren't really aware of this, and their doctors don't really get that explicit with it, because by and large, if you've got a younger doctor, he doesn't like this stuff either. Even though he's in the business, quote unquote, he's never had to make these choices, and he doesn't like thinking about it. So I had to bring up an orchiectomy, and the only reason I brought it up was I discovered there's side effects from those shots, and there's side effects from those pills, and they affect your health. So my health is my biggest asset going into this thing. You know, that's my big thing, is every doctor said it to me. You're in perfect health other than this cancer. And so I was very protective of my health. When I heard that all the side effects from the shots, first of all, ADT has side effects, obviously, you know. And John and I were raised on a farm, so, you know, we castrated plenty of animals from roosters to pigs to the bulls, okay. Right? And we know what that is and what happens. So you're going to have some of that. You know, that's a side effect. But it's not really that bad, you know, like you're not going to lose your facial hair or anything like that. I still got a beard. But if you choose those shots, you're going to have side effects and you're going to have to deal with those. And that means more treatments, more pills, more stuff to deal with. And I said, no, I'm not going to do that, because I had read up. And you can get an orchiectomy, and your side effects are very different than the ones you have with the shots. You just have the side effect of no androgen, which is a relief. So I opted to do it, and I had to make these choices quickly because my doctor was in a hurry for me to take action. We had to get my PSA down. We had to start putting that cancer to sleep, shrinking things, etc. And stage four is it spread outside the prostate, and the first place it goes is your bones, and mine went to my spine. So,
and that's pretty standard. I mean, standard. Stage four, if you look and read the literature, that is by far the most common metastasis site is going to be bone. And the other thing to keep in mind is you hear bone and cancer, and quite often that shocks you and think, well, you've probably heard about people with bone cancer, which is extremely painful.
Yes.
While when you're dealing with it as a secondary site of your prostate cancer, I'm not saying it's a walk in the park, but it is nowhere near the cancer that if it's bone cancer. So they're two different things.
Yeah, and by this time, I met my oncologist right before I got my orchiectomy, and he said, I've looked at the scans. He told me how great my health was. And then the second thing he said was, you're really lucky, because you just went stage four. So the sites where it's outside the prostate are small, and we can deal with this. So it was very encouraging. I was very upbeat about the thing. And then I have to look at the calendar, but I got my biopsy on my birthday, and then by the 28th I'd had my orchiectomy. And there's a whole thing involved with androgen deprivation and probably and orchiectomies and all that stuff that deserves its own special show. But I'll just say that my challenge was it's not a bad operation. It's more complicated than a vasectomy, but it's kind of in the neighborhood. And so it wasn't really that bad, but the week after the orchiectomy is that bad. But after that week, it's done. You're fine. So my only other challenge at that point was now I got to learn to pee. And then at this point, I can almost pee. I have to put a temporary catheter in the morning and the evening before I go to bed and drain what I can't get out normally. But I'm starting to almost pee like a normal person. So that's a huge huge thing for me personally. I don't have to have a bag. I had a bag and a permanent catheter for 4 months, 4.5 months. So being out of that, it sounds terrible, but it really wasn't that terrible either. And John had a bag for how long, John?
I just had my bag. Well, what happens after surgery is you're catheterized, and so I had it for about 2 weeks. And, you know, just to kind of go back a little bit to my more traditional treatment, I ended up having the surgery. I ended up being catheterized for those 2 weeks. Went back in, got it yanked out, and I'll tell you, the fact is that the importance of having a very experienced surgeon makes a big difference, because the horror stories you hear about in terms of incontinence, you know, quite often will make the difference as to what you're going to do, radiation versus surgery. And so right away, once I had I was catheterized in the doctor's office, you know, had it taken out, the nurse immediately gave me a set of Depends, you know, sort of diapers to put on, because I wouldn't have necessarily a good control over my urination. So, and then she gave me a set of exercises to do. Well, I thought, well, I better go to the Walgreens, get myself some Depends, be ready. So here I do. I get 15 or 20 pack of Depends, and then I go home. And I say probably within, you know, I do the exercises, which do with control and push are the main ones, to be able to control your urine stream and also be able to push it out. Right. And I don't know what, but within 3 days, I'm pretty well in control. And I can look over and see the 12 or 13 Depends I still have as a result of this. On a precautionary measure, you know, did them for a while. So the nurse calls me up and says, well, how many Depends are you going through a day? And I said, I'm putting one on at night just as precautionary and really not even needing it at this point. I told this story to my colon and rectal surgeon, the one who did my, with the rectal cancer. And he said, and it was around Valentine's Day, he said, you ought to send your urologist a Valentine, because he did a great job. And you know what? This just proves the fact that, number one, your selection and the ability to get the right person to do that. Because the thing, when I talk about the prostate, it's a small organ that you know, you would think, well, it's a walk in the park for surgery. But the bottom line, it's sort of like, think of your car that has a battery that needs to be changed, and it's in the worst position under the hood.
And yeah, surrounded by
and you got to go through all kinds of stuff. And once that prostate comes out, then there's the reconnection of a lot of blood cells. And those blood cells and blood, you know, blood, blood vessels, the veins, vessels, blood vessels are going to be critical to the success of your surgery. And I'm just very thankful that I got the right guy.
Oh, there's nerves, there's muscles, there's all kinds of
muscles,
stuff down
yes.
there.
Yeah, there's all kinds of things that have to be reconnected, because they're basically taking out the prostate and then having to reconnect that to, you know, the pieces on both ends. And Jerry, you're more familiar with the organs involved. But so, you know, in my case, I kind of, at this point, I'm not thinking too much about prostate. But actually, it's, you know, because I've got this other cancer. But the bottom line is that it's, you know, your situation is it's still in front of you, a lot of that, while mine is in a secondary basis. It's, you know, I'm going to have checkouts with my urologist, but I'm not going to see you again for another 4 months.
Right. I see
your situation. Yeah. Your situation's frustrating, because your treatment and knowing the results of your treatment are going to be there's a longer time involved.
Oh yeah, yeah, you much know? Longer time. This is stretching at least 3 years, and I'll spout out the variables here that I have to be looking at. And also, just as an aside, I hear about John in his situation, and I've heard all the stories about everybody with prostate cancer, and I'm thinking, well, I'm incontinence. That's the first thing men think of. It depends, right?
Yeah.
Because that's and maybe catheters. Those are the things. Those are the scary things. This is where the fear comes in. And you have to confront this stuff, and it's good to hear this stuff if you don't have this right now, because this stuff is not that scary. And if you're being afraid about it and it's affecting your going to the doctor, this is bad. Because you need to go to the doctor, get your checkups, do your stuff. Do not get yourself freaked out about this, because John and I have gone through it, and it's not worth putting anything off or being afraid or anything, because it's just simply not that bad. And, you know, I use a catheter twice a day, and I lived with one for 4.5 months permanently, there's nothing to putting them in and taking them out. There's nothing to it. And, you know, incontinence, yeah, okay, that can be a problem, but like John said, get a good doctor. But I was anticipating the same thing, and no. My doctor says, no, you got the opposite problem. Your problem is retention. You're retaining, so you're going to have the opposite thing your brother has. You don't need to worry. If you have an incontinence problem, we are successful. Because you can't pee right now. So, okay, I get it.
Oh, dear.
So now we have two really different paths yet. You know, John knows what I talk about when I talk about these things. I know what he talks about when he talks about this stuff. The rectal cancer is a different thing. We'll talk about that in another time. But this business with my treatment is basically, I've had an orchiectomy, so my drop-off of androgen and testosterone was fast, faster than it would be with the shots. However, there is a half-life to testosterone, so it sticks around for a while. But my doctors were even surprised that I went from 125 down to 5-something, which is really fast. And now I'm down to, my last checkup was at 1.06, and I'll probably get close to zero. And so that, you know, guys who track PSA love this stuff, and they're happy about it, and I'm happy about it. But I'm not out of the woods yet. Because the way prostate cancer works, and it's not a normal cancer, it's not the stuff you read about before or heard about. Prostate cancer is a slow-moving and kind of seems almost like a dumb cancer compared to some of these others. They're so aggressive. But this thing, even when it spreads, it's slow, and its treatment is the same. You know, like mine's in my spine. My treatment's the same, androgen deprivation. So what's my downside? Am I okay? Am I out of the woods? No. Because what happens over a period of time, usually about 3 years, the cancer figures it out and it starts coming back. Your PSA starts rising again. So I got very curious about this. I read everything I could read about it. John did the same thing on my behalf and on his behalf. And what we found was there are some outlying studies that are more interesting to tell you something. There's a treatment in Israel they tried where they had these men on, you know, ADT, and then they would flood them with testosterone occasionally. And that would completely knock the prostate cancer off course. If you start the flutter, they call it, where your PSA starts going up, they use this as an antidote to it, and it worked perfectly. In fact, it worked so perfectly, it actually killed the prostate cancer because it affected the DNA. It was so shocking to the cancer that it affected the DNA. So my thing going forward is, I have two things to worry about, and only two things, peeing and my PSA coming back up. And I have to wait for the PSA to come back up before I can do anything. So I'm just waiting for the other shoe to drop with my stuff. And so I have time, I have 3 years or so, where I can figure out what I can do, and I have to keep reading because people are continually studying and doing great stuff on this. So my key to success is fooling the cancer. It's looking for Jerry, and it thinks Jerry has a certain hormonal profile. And it takes us 3 years to figure out that Jerry has a different hormonal profile, and then it goes to work again. But if I change it up somehow, and you can do that, you know, that's a common thing. But how much of it you do and how you do it, that's to be determined in another discussion. We'll have it another time. But that just shows you how different our situations are. John's got his prostate cancer in the rearview mirror, kind of like Jeff does a little bit.
Yeah, but mine is nowhere near quite that much. Just to kind of summarize a little bit here, the fact is that I think what we were saying is that, number one, you know, the importance of, you know, finding out and doing your checkups, but stage 4 is not necessarily a death sentence.
Nope.
Advances, and as Jerry's pointed out, there's always advances being made. But in your case, it's a weight gain. And that's the frustrating thing that he has to go through. My situation is a little bit of a weight, too. I mean, I'll have, you know, just because I've had my prostate taken out, there's no indication in my lymph nodes that I had any cancer further on. There's what I call sneaky cells. And in your case, you call them, you know, cells that, you know, all of a sudden figure it out. Smart cells, you know, that in 3 years figure it out. I call them sneaky cells.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean that, you know, that something can't pop up. But there are treatments that allow us to continue living and having a relatively good quality of life. And that's, I think, what you need to think about. There's not a cure for cancer, but doggone treatments are getting better and better that allow us to lead normal lives for longer periods of time.
And I'd say the last thing here we can hit before we knock it off is that you John and I talk about leaning into the treatment. You know, don't be shy. You know, you have to be a little aggressive about this stuff, both with your doctors and with yourself. And you have to study and learn, because you can't get everything from your doctors. They don't have the time. They have lots of patients. There's lots of stuff going on. And I have a great urologist who's very responsive. We text each other. And not many doctors will let you text them. So I'm in a really good situation. So that's, you know, and my oncologist is great too. So, but my oncologist, he's not used to the situation I'm in. So he's used to me, and this is an example, I'm bringing this up because this is a really good example. He doesn't know that much about guys who have had orchiectomies. So the stuff he puts me on are for people who have had the shots. And the people who have the shots have a higher incidence of bone fractures and problems with their bones. So he puts me on a bone infusion, which lays me low for two months of it. And I started to feel these things that John was just talking about that people feel when they have bone cancer. And I said, I'm not going to do this. I'm sacrificing my health, and that's my number one asset. So I read and I studied. And when I brought all this up to him, he said, you know, you're right. He said, you're right. The hell with the bone infusions. Let's deal with that as it comes along, and you have other options you can use to deal with that. And we'll do that down the road. And right now, keeping your health where it is the most important thing. And, you know, I'll see you in 2 months. Let me know if anything comes up. And I'm in the same boat with my urologist now. I'm on my own program. Anytime my retention of urine gets low enough, I can stop using a catheter. So that's looking better and better. So outlook, good. But it's only because I really leaned into it. I looked at it hard. I made the tough decisions. And, you know, I'm not looking for a medal or anything. But you have to do this, too, if you're a male and you're in your 50s, you're getting close, you know, you got a 50-50 chance. If it's in your family, there's no 50-50 chance. If you're a spouse, you have to stay on this, and you have to keep an eye on your spouse. You know, how much time is he spending peeing? You know, and if that's looking wonky, get him into the doctor for a PSA. And if he's not doing his PSA every year, you know, everything, oh, I don't have time for physical, blah, 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 blah. Okay, screw it. Just get a PSA. That's your number one risk. Just do it, you know?
Yep.
Anyway, that's pretty much it. What do you think, John?
Yeah, I think that pretty well tells us. There's side roads here that we could take and spend a lot of time, but I think that pretty well, you know, tells our situation as it's developed and where we are.
Yeah, and John's been a huge help to me because, you know, he double-checks me. I don't trust my thinking. I've got the added burden of grief, and it affects the way I think. When you lose your daughter or your son, it's different than losing any other member of your family or anyone close to you. And you can easily sink into despondency and all kinds of other stuff. And having someone you can talk to. Now, I could talk to Mary Jane, my wife, and we have a great relationship, but she and I are like the same person almost. We've been together 44 years. So you know, it really helps to have an outside, they're almost third party, and John's almost not a third party, but he is. And he looks at things differently, which is a plus. So he's really helped me make good decisions and make me talk about the decisions I'm making. He doesn't make them for me, but, you know, and vice versa, I would say.
Yeah, I think that pretty well, you know, tells a story. It's been an amazing journey, and people, you know, will talk to you and look at you and like, you know, gee, wow, that's been a lot. But as I look back on it, you know, you have challenges. Sometimes they're every day, sometimes they're once a week or whatever. And I feel good that I've been able to go this route. And I think that the fact that we've had this dialogue going on has been a big factor in making this is an easier road to travel, is the way I look at it.
Definitely. Okay, cool. And that's why we ended up podcasting.
Yeah, so, you know, obviously when you start talking, you can only talk about your health challenges so long, and before you know it, you're talking about other things. In my case, it's baseball. In his case, Jerry's case, it's more politics, and then we have common things such as films and entertainment industry, etc.
Our distractions, if you will.
Yeah.
Okay, well, this has been great, John.
Okay, sounds, it's been real good, no doubt.
Talk to you later.
Sounds good. Okay, bye-bye. Thank you.